Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, the Supreme Court issues its final two decisions of the term at this hour on the Hobby Lobby case, whether employers that are not religious institutions can claim a religious exemption to the contraception coverage mandate in Obamacare, and on Harris versus Quinn, do public sector unions have the right to collect dues from employees they represent in contract negotiations, even if those employees decline to join the union? That has big implications for Democratic Party candidates' funding, as well as unions and union members. We're expecting those decisions momentarily, and we will keep you posted. Also today, the chances of a Long Island Railroad strike in less than 3 weeks, and why a kind of wildlife not seen in New York City in hundreds of years has been spotted in the Bronx. But our first guest is New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito, continuing to forge a new progressive era in New York City policy, along with Mayor de Blasio. For example, last week, Council passed a plan, which the mayor is expected to sign, to create a New York City ID card. And the city's new fiscal year begins tomorrow with the first de Blasio-Mark Viverito budget deal in place, reflecting their priorities. We'll talk about that and more now with Speaker Mark Viverito. Madam Speaker, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
And forgive me in advance for the interruptions that may come a few times if we get Supreme Court news.
Sure.
But June 30th and July 1st are always big days for city policy as the budget years begin and end, as you know. So what do you see as the most significant things that your budget does to bring progressive change?
I think basically, I mean, the essence is that this budget reflects priorities that positively impact the lives of every New Yorker. I mean, if you read the papers in these days, obviously we see the crisis in homelessness. We see the crisis with food pantries and the need for more food. We have a hunger crisis in this city. We have been able to enhance certain initiatives and programs that provide greater services to everyday New Yorkers. That's one thing, obviously, when we look at the campaign that the mayor was very strong on and that we totally supported very strongly. Universal pre-K is critically important. Now we're also doing a pilot that we engaged in negotiations and we agreed to with this administration of every middle school child receiving a free lunch. That's really important. We're hoping to expand that to every single child. So this is that kind of a budget that really talks about the needs comprehensively of every New Yorker, and it takes it into account. The municipal ID program, which we talked about, not part of the budget negotiations per se, but something that we did pass legislatively last week, is also a kind of along those lines as well, this progressive vision that we have for New York City.
And we'll get to municipal IDs in some detail in a minute. But you and the mayor had basically the same priorities, as you're saying, but you can't fund everything you want. And I'm curious, what was the hardest choice that you had to make together? Between what and what, since money doesn't grow on city streets?
No, I mean, everything is a challenge, right? You want to be able, like you said, to fund everything. We are, and we'd say we are lucky, I believe, this year, and it's a good thing. So I think it's a good indicator in the direction that the city is going, that we did have, and we had very conservative revenue projections that we've exceeded that. So that has enabled us to not have to, one, engage in the budget dance, which we historically have engaged in with the prior administration of cutting vital services like our firehouses, and being able to really get productive conversations about where should we be focusing our efforts and what could we do better. So I think looking at the educational needs of our children obviously is very much along those lines, and looking at how we can change policies. When it comes to the homeless policy that has been enacted in the past, how can we look at changing that so that we are more positively impacting people's lives? So we were in a good place that we were able to really engage in productive conversations with this mayor and get a lot done. And we're not saying it's going to be like that endlessly, but clearly we want to continue to engage productively with the administration, not engage in these fights over vital services and refunding them, but really look at policy changes that we can enact to have a greater impact in people's lives and being able to move the city forward.
And you did have this greater revenue than was anticipated. Thank you, Wall Street, at least for this year. But let me ask you about one that's in, one that's out. One group, not as happy as they might be, is advocates for the libraries. There is a baseline library funding system now, which they like, but they wanted money for a sixth day, at least a sixth day, of operating hours. And considering the central role libraries play as immigrant information centers for low-income people's web access and more, why didn't that make the cut?
The libraries have always been and continue to be a priority of the city council. We were able to successfully advocate, and we were able to get the amount baselined so that no cuts from the past several years was implemented. We had the same level of funding that you've seen in the past 4 or 5 years. Now, granted, we did want to take it to six-day service, I think something that unfortunately we haven't seen since 2008, but we were able to increase some funding, and we did allocate $10 million to enhance the funding that the administration put in for libraries. So that is going to be an ongoing conversation. We understand vital importance, the critical importance that libraries play in our communities. We see it every day. And so we were able to bring in some additional monies to enhance what was baselined. We obviously are going to engage in more productive conversations down the road in these next months into the next year to bring back six-day service. That's ideally where we would want to end up. But we did see an increase, and that's incredibly important to delineate.
And one that's in, I see you allocated about $3 million for countdown clocks at about 100 bus stops. The riders will like it. At least they'll know how much longer they have to be frustrated or cold or wet. But why isn't that the MTA's responsibility?
I mean, that's always the conversations we engage in, right? There's always limits to what entities have in terms of what they fund. We have the same conversation when it comes to New York City Housing Authority, that really it is the council members through their capital allocations that are able to put the security cameras in. We're very excited. This time, I engaged in a very productive conversation with the administration where we, as the city council, are putting in $25 million. The administration is going to match it for $50 million in security enhancements at our public housing developments. But this is the kind of conversation that we get into. Ideally, yes, the MTA should be doing that. In cases where our communities speak to us and say that that's something they would like to see, those are the decisions we have to make with a limited amount of taxpayer dollars that we have available to reinvest in our communities.
New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark-Viverito with us. We are also awaiting the two big end-of-term Supreme Court decisions expected momentarily. We'll jump in as soon as they're announced. All right, Speaker Viverito, municipal ID cards. How are you going to track massive use by New Yorkers as their ID of choice over driver's licenses or whatever else, so they don't become a scarlet letter for undocumented immigrants who I think are the very people you're trying to help?
Right. So this is where, again, it's great to have a very productive and proactive relationship with an administration. You know, in the next, our intent is to have this roll out at the end of this year, beginning of next year. So we have to engage in the whole rollout campaign, educating our communities, letting them know the benefits of having this ID card, really amping up the incentives that are attached to the card so that people are interested. But the reality is that this is going to be of great interest to every sector of our city. Why? Well, seniors, for instance, may have a harder time accessing a state-issued ID because they're limited in what kind of documentation they can produce to establish residency. The state is very clear, is very specific about what kind of IDs you have, and in some cases, somebody may not have that. So this ID is going to allow for some flexibility with the kind of IDs that you can demonstrate or the kind of documents you can demonstrate to reflect residency. So that's something it could benefit seniors. Seniors definitely have expressed to us the importance of this, and they've testified at our hearings. When you talk about the LGBT community and you talk about the transgender community in particular, that they can self-identify on this ID, that's critically important. And I think that's something that we're very, very proud of. And obviously, yes, undocumented individuals that can establish that they live here, are paying local taxes, obviously they live in the city, would also be able to present some level of documents. And I just want to be clear, I think people may have a misunderstanding of the ID. This is a New York City municipal ID. We're not engaging in conversations with other municipalities about accepting this as a formal form of ID. You can cannot use this ID to travel. You know, so it's very much a municipal ID. We want to really increase the benefits attached to the ID so that it is something that people will be proud to carry, and we believe that's going to be the case.
Can you use it to get around the green card requirement for qualifying for a job?
Well, we are going to follow every single federal law in place, and we are in the process. You know, this ID and the concepts of this, obviously we're going to implement it. The NYPD has signed off on it. We've engaged in very extensive conversations with the NYPD to the point where they feel comfortable in how it will be implemented. We have to work with them in the upcoming months, as well as with the other city agencies that will be involved, to make sure that we can administer this in the safest way and that it really upholds to all forms of regulations at the state and federal level.
Now, this just in from the Supreme Court in the Harris versus Quinn case on whether public employee unions can require dues to be paid by employees who they, in fact, negotiate for, but who choose as individuals not to join the union. This is a 5-4 decision, a split Supreme Court. Justice Alito, conservative justice, wrote the opinion saying, to some extent, unions cannot collect those dues from non-union employees. But it looks like a relatively narrow ruling from what we're seeing from the first words that hurts public unions but doesn't gut them. So the court recognizes a category of partial public employees who cannot be required to contribute union bargaining fees, but it does preserve language about full public unions, which we're going to try to clarify. So we'll couch this to start as a mixed ruling on air for public sector unions' ability to raise money. And this, as we said before, since unions are such big donors to Democratic Party candidates, could have implications for funding for the Democratic Party around the country. So Harris versus Quinn, the first ruling released, and we'll keep fleshing out the details of it. The Hobby Lobby case on Obamacare mandatory contraception coverage, they'll be announcing that in a few minutes, and we'll keep breaking in as we talk with New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito, mostly about other things. I wonder if you have an opinion, though, about this Harris versus Quinn, because it would definitely affect New York City employees. I know there are some categories of public employee here who can either choose to join the union or not, whichever union represents them in the public sector, but they still have to pay the equivalent of the dues to the unions because the unions are negotiating for them. Is this an issue you've taken a stand on?
I'm a strong, and obviously I'm not, I don't have all the details, right, of this decision, so it's going to be hard to comment specifically on it. I believe that what we're seeing nationally is an attack on the labor sector. I'm a strong supporter of unions. They stand up for workers. They create a better quality of, in terms of work conditions, and they fight on behalf of the workers to get better wages and really bring people into the middle class. That's critically important, I believe, and it's been important here in New York City. So I believe, and we've seen it in different ways, different states, there's been a real serious attack on the labor sector because they do see it as a game changer, has level of influence, and also because there are many that want to drive down wages in this country, and we've seen that in the conversations we're having on the minimum wage. So I'm a strong supporter, and anything that tries to whittle away at that is something that I would not be in favor of.
Do you see any conflict here of kind of, good versus good? Because on the one hand, an employee who, for whatever reason, chooses not to join their public sector union maybe shouldn't be forced to pay dues to a group that they're not joining. On the other hand, that union is negotiating for that person's wages and benefits whether they join the union or not. So there's, that's why there's conflict. That's mm-hmm. why this made it all the way to the Supreme Court.
Right. Well, I mean, it's again, I do really would love to hear the analysis you'll have with your guests on this issue, and I'd like to read more in depth the decision and the implications that it has.
All right. So back to municipal ID cards. We took calls on this on Friday, mm-hmm. and I want to play for you part of one opposing the IDs. This is Craig in Queens.
I would just like to say, I think it's a bad idea with the ID cards. Uh-huh. I believe it's rewarding criminal behavior. If I don't wear my seatbelt when I'm driving or I'm on a talk phone talking, I get a ticket. It's a crime to enter this country illegally, overstay your vehicle, your visa, and other things. And communities suffer. I'm a homeowner. I live in Queens. My son's kindergarten class was bursting at the seam with 25 kids in the class. It's cause and effect. People don't want to, you know, they say everybody's welcome. Everybody came here from somewhere, but there's a process. And when the process is skirted, other people get hurt. And why should we reward certain behaviors and other behaviors of criminals?
So, Melissa Mark Viverito, why don't we react to that caller, Craig in Queens?
I think sometimes people may just have a misunderstanding of exactly what this ID would do, and I think might be reacting to other things that they may feel about this issue. It's a very, very crucial issue in this country, the debate we're having on immigration reform. We have not had serious immigration reform in this country for decades, and it's something that is way overdue. There are millions of people, 11 million, that are living in this country, that are contributing to our society, that live in our communities, that attend our public schools. These are members of our community contributing, and to some extent, yes, paying taxes. That's the reality. So this is a way, and in the city, in New York City, we do have an executive order very explicitly that says that anyone who acts as a city services will never be asked their immigration status. This is a card that will help people access city services first and foremost. So it kind of goes along the lines of that already, what's in place and what we believe and uphold in this city.
So, for example, on that level, it's a public safety measure. If somebody's being a victim of domestic violence, let's say, but they're undocumented and they're afraid to contact the authorities, you're hoping that because they would have a legitimate New York City ID to show, it's not a green card, doesn't get them a job, doesn't get them permanent residency status, but maybe at least it gives them a little more confidence that they can call the police if they're in an emergency.
Exactly, and that was one of the other things I was going to mention, is that also in terms of contributing and being a collaborative partner with our NYPD, right? We need the assistance of our community members and to feel safe and to feel secure that they can avail themselves to an officer if they need it without fearing the repercussions. That makes a better community, right, when we all participate and we're all actively involved. So if that provides individuals that level of confidence, then you know what? It makes our community safer, and that's important as well. And again, to reiterate, this is not a card that can be used outside of New York City. This is a municipal ID card for local city services. And I think it's a very strong message that we're sending with this. We've voted on having an ID program. Now we're in the process of ironing out the details with the different relevant city agencies, and we will hope be rolling it out at the end of the year. So this is something that we are hoping will also, I know other municipalities are doing it, but obviously New York City, because of our sheer size and the important role that we play, you know, people are going to really view this, and hopefully would inspire other municipalities to do the same thing.
Potential for voter fraud, people registering people to vote and asking for ID. Of course, if you're undocumented, you're not a citizen, you don't have the right to vote. Could it be used that way?
No. Those are the things that we will ensure, right? And I know people want to lay out all these different scenarios, but we're very clear about what this ID card is for. So you couldn't use it, right? First of all, you're not supposed to be asked to show any ID when you go vote, right? So let's be clear about that. So it's not something that would stop you, but if you don't have it and you're legitimately registered to vote, but we definitely want to ensure, as I said before, too, that we're adhering to all the local and the state and the federal regulations as well and guidelines.
By the way, it looks like Governor Cuomo said yesterday, if we're going to make a real difference on immigration, it's going to take a federal response, which I'm sure you agree with.
Of course.
But the Daily News is playing it as him dismissing the importance of your municipal IDs. Have you spoken to the governor?
No, I have not on this issue. This is an issue that we can resolve locally and municipally, and we have, and we've legislated it. The mayor supports it. We're going to implement it. And for all the reasons we've spoken about, I believe it is a great, great message that we're sending. It is a good decision that we've made. It's great legislation that we've passed. I'm very proud of it. I've been an incredibly strong advocate for immigration reform at the federal level, but then also to make sure that we make it clear in the city that we welcome everyone. Anyone that comes here to positively contribute and that is positively contributing it, they're welcome. And so we are really proud of this decision.
One other thing about Governor Cuomo, it looks like he will have a more progressive Democratic primary challenger, Fordham University law professor Zephyr Teachout for the September primary. If I go by an issues checklist, you're probably a lot closer to her. Might you endorse?
I have already endorsed Governor Cuomo and for his reelection. I was at the Democratic Convention, and so we are already made that decision.
How come? Why?
How come? Oh, because I believe in being able to work, as we've been doing with the mayor, on issues that impact New York City. He has been good on and this is another issue that obviously is of concern to us in terms of gun safety. We need greater regulations, obviously, at the federal level, much stricter regulations, but he's taken measures at the state level, marriage equality and other matters that we've been discussing. We have now talked, and the mayor, I know, has been engaged in conversations about greater funding for us to be able to create some sort of a new subsidy program for homeless families. There's multiple issues, and I think that going along those lines, there's a lot of work that we need to get done at the city level. We've created a very aggressive state agenda, legislative and budget agenda, that we've shared with the governor, we shared with the legislature. We would like to see more progress on, but I believe that he is aligned with those issues that we consider important and that we want to move forward in the city.
What would you say might be number one or one and two for next year at the state, as far as the city is concerned and you and the mayor are concerned? This year it was obviously universal pre-K is number one. You also got Vision Zero, legislation to help make the streets safer. Then next year you get to go back again. Is it going to be a hike on taxes for the top 1% to fund other things? Or do you have a 2015 state agenda? Is anything like that reflected in the new budget that begins tomorrow in the city's fiscal year?
Some of the things that we've advocated for, and I'd have to pull up our agenda, but we definitely want to continue, right, and continue legislatively on the things that have not passed and have not gotten any sort of debate. We want to push forward the legislation that we laid out in that agenda. And obviously on the budget side, we want to continue to see the commitment to. It's been said that there is money there in the upcoming years for universal pre-K, but we need to make sure that that continues to see greater funding. We still are fighting for the campaign for fiscal equity, right, funding that we are entitled to as a city. That's really important to get more money for education and other matters along those lines that we've really been advocating for at the state level. I want to see personally, this is something that's a real priority to me and has been in my 8 years, is I want to see a commitment from the state for public housing. We have not seen any sort of monetary contribution in the budget for public housing from the state in a long time. That's something I'm going to be advocating for. Public housing is the cornerstone of affordable housing in this city, and we are seeing a real need for an infusion of funds to do capital upgrades because the housing stock is decades old and needs a lot of repairs. So that's the kind of stuff that we will be advocating for that really makes a difference in people's lives.
Let me touch one or two more issues, and then I know we're going to be out of time. And folks, we have Pete Donahue standing by, transit reporter for the Daily News, talking about the prospects for a Long Island Railroad strike in less than 3 weeks. But we finish up with New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito. We appreciate her joining us on this last day of the old fiscal year in New York City. So much change coming tomorrow when the new fiscal year starts, but other things going on as well. And on another issue, the New York State Court of Appeals threw out the large-size sugary drinks limit that Mayor Bloomberg tried to institute through the Board of Health and Mayor de Blasio supported. You were commenting on this when the ruling came down the other day, opposing those limits because city council didn't get to vote on them. Why is it progressive to side with the beverage industry on this?
It's not about deciding with the beverage industry. If you took a look at what was being proposed in terms of this ban, it was incredibly onerous. I could not even imagine how the Department of Health, with the limited funding and the limited staff, was going to be able to even try to enforce this ban. That, to me, was just misguided and inefficient, if ineffective policies. It was going to be costly to some extent, and it was just going to be ineffective. We really need to look at the underlying issues and look more aggressively at what we can do to encourage healthier lifestyles in our communities, healthier options. New York State Department of Education mandates that children in high school, well, at all levels in our public school system, should have a minimum number of minutes a week for a physical education. That's not being honored. That's something that we need to look at. How can we look at other options that are going to create healthier opportunities? What are we, I know we've spoken to the chancellor, we've seen some level of change in some of the cafeterias in our public schools, creating healthier options and food options for our children. These are the things that we should be looking at. I think this was much more punitive. It was ineffective. It was going to be burdensome on our small businesses and possibly impact our small businesses. Grocery stores could sell them. The local pizza shop couldn't sell the drinks. It was just very random. It did not seem cohesive as a policy to me, and I was opposed to it from the beginning. I was consistent in my opposition. So I'm glad that the court has done what it's done, and now if the mayor presents any sort of change or any sort of policy, it's going to, and we have to have a conversation about it, we will. It'll get a thorough vetting. We'll have hearings on it, and then we'll make a decision, but not the way it was being proposed.
And I want to ask you one follow-up question on that, but this just in from the Associated Press, the Supreme Court says employers with religious objections can refuse to pay for contraception. So the contraception coverage mandate in Obamacare is struck down, and this means not just churches or synagogues or mosques or other religious institutions explicitly, but any individual employer. It had to do with the crafts chain Hobby Lobby, where the owners feel it's against their religion to provide health insurance that includes contraception coverage. They can opt out. There is some narrowness in this ruling as well, according to what we're seeing on First Blush. According to the website SCOTUS blog, the decision concerns only the contraceptive mandate and should not be understood to mean that all insurance mandates, that is for blood transfusions or vaccinations, necessarily fail if they conflict with an employer's religious beliefs. It does not provide a shield for employers who might cloak illegal discrimination as a religious practice, the court also says. So we will dig into this in a few minutes in a little more depth. But contraception coverage out as a mandate from Obamacare per the Supreme Court. But it looks like they're trying to prevent a slippery slope so that any employer can claim a religious exemption to anything else in insurance mandates or anything else in the law. And my only segue back to you on that, Speaker Mark Viverito, is just back to this sugary drinks limit for city policy. You know, it may be our number one public health problem, type 2 diabetes. And I see the beverage companies, as kind of the public health person that I am, as diabetes pushers, as much as cigarettes companies are cancer pushers. And I don't think they care any more than tobacco companies about what they're doing to our kids and our grown-ups' health. You said last week there are other ways to address the same problem. Are you proposing any?
We will. I think, as I mentioned, providing healthier options and opportunities. I am not a fan of these sugary drinks at all. I drink water primarily. Maybe once in a blue moon I may have a diet soda. But I do not propose any of this, and I think it's very unhealthy. And I really would encourage people not to drink them. So I think that we need to create more uniform policies that apply universally. And again, the way it was being implemented or the thought process through which Bloomberg wanted to implement it was just going to be too burdensome and particularly impact in a negative way and disproportionately setting up an unfair advantage to certain sectors over others. So, you know, there's ways that we can go about it. I think that we want to talk to the Chancellor and the Board of Education about, and the Department of Education about creating healthy options in the school setting. She's talked about expanding the salad bars and more healthy options in schools. We've got to look at really aggressively doing that. Implementing physical education in our schools, we've got to encourage our young people to have healthier lifestyles, and that includes exercise options. That's why I'm also a proponent of the bike lanes, right? It's particularly in communities like mine. You want to encourage people and you want to create safety in that process. You want to encourage people to exercise and be outdoors. And that's all part of a greater vision that we should be aspiring to, not punitive measures that are going to be ineffective at the end of the day.
All right. Well, thanks for giving us so much
time
this morning. You want to say anything about next steps or anything
no,
on the
I
way
mean,
out?
just as you were saying about this court ruling, very disappointing on that last one. We've just been seeing such an attack against women's reproductive rights and their choices, and I think it's really unfair, and it's really a sad day. So thank you for the time, and we've been doing great work here in the city with this administration, and we're going to continue to work each and every day to make New York City a better place for all.
New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito, thanks again.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up, we will take a closer look at those two Supreme Court decisions being handed down this morning. Also, is a Long Island Railroad strike likely? There is a deadline in less than 3 weeks. Stay with us.